You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is Black Hollywood Live, Stand Up, Sit Down, featuring in-depth discussion and interviews with stand-up comedians on the art of stand-up comedy. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live, Stand Up, Sit Down.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Stand Up, Sit Down. I'm your host here, Nick Perdue, and today I have a very special, very funny, hilarious guy who's been in the game for years. You know his name, you know his voice, Mr. Rudy Rush.
What up, Nick?
How are you, man?
I'm good, man. You know what? This is an exciting experience, first of all, because this building, this house, this shack, on the outside, inside, it's fantastic in here.
Yeah.
Man, you guys really did a good job with this studio.
Yeah, you know, because we like to keep a low profile, you know, because we have big profile names like you coming in,
yeah.
You know, so we don't like the paparazzi outside and everything, you know, so it's like, oh, yeah, we just come over the house.
You know, I can't lie. I tell everybody, I just met you not too long ago because I just moved back to L.A. Real nice dude. He was like, yo, come be on my show, blah, blah, blah. I get the address. I pull up. I'm like, yo, this dude is insane. I'm about to be tied up for some Ving Rhames. You know, I said, please. I called my mother. I was like, if I'm not found by 1230. No, this
come
is awesome.
Come to this address.
This is great, man. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So let's just jump right into it. So let me know, because you're from New York.
Yes, okay? Sir.
And so, you know, a lot of comedians, you know, they were the funny kid growing up, or they were like the real badass kid growing up. So which one were you?
Now, you know what? I was the funny kid. I wasn't bad until, like, you know, I would always get kicked out. I went to Catholic school.
Mm.
So I would get kicked out of class a lot, you know, go to the principal's office. But when I got into high school, I figured how, because I was really smart, too.
Mm.
So I figured out a way to actually, you know, help the teacher out in terms of, like, when we break down sonnets and Shakespearean stuff. And I would say something crazy off the wall, and everybody would be laughing, like, get out of here. She's like, no, he's right. You know? And so everybody's like, what did you say again? So it actually helped the teacher, help keep me in class.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And then from that, I was just always the funniest guy around. You know, even with my friends hanging out afterwards at the clubs, or, you know, I played basketball in high school. So always, you know, joking around at practice. So I can say I was always like the funny guy around.
Did you get voted class clown?
No, never that. Cause I was like, you know what? I never got beat up. Like, class clowns usually get put in lockers and stuff sometimes, you know? So I was also a jock. So I got respect too, but I was just a funny guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I was a little mad because I didn't get voted funniest. I didn't get anything. It was
terrible.
Yeah,
you look a little upset over there.
I mean, it still hurts. It's bitter. You know, 10-year reunion's coming up. You know, I'm gonna start kicking ass and taking names when I get back.
You know, nobody goes to the reunion unless they're doing good.
Yeah, well, I figure, you know, I'm doing a little something
like,
right
now. Yeah, you're doing your thing. Let me show
you. You see me on Facebook. Yeah, you see the pics on Instagram.
Let me show Shonda what she missed out on during the prom.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I'm gonna take skinny Nick. Well, look at Nick now. So what made you want to pursue comedy?
You know what? It's funny. Like, I always was a fan of comedy, but I never thought to pursue it. You know, I worked in a law firm when I first started. When I got out of high school, I said, I'm going to save some money. I was going to community college, taking some classes here and there.
Yeah.
I worked in a law firm and, you know, really was working my way up. And everybody was like, oh, man, you're so funny. And this young lady named Diane Lisi, at the time, she was like, man, you're really funny. And Living Color was still casting.
Oh.
And this is when Jim Carrey was leaving, Tommy Davis and Jamie Foxx. So they were still trying to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
I went on a call. Like, you know, they had like 5,000 people come in New York. Three original characters you have to have. I got like 4 or 5 callbacks. They called me. Fox said, you know, we weren't going to keep it going, but we'll keep you in mind, which to me meant everything because I was just like, they considered me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I took a chance, went to this small comedy club, New York Comedy Club. They had to bring 2 paying customers, 3, in order to get on the amateur show.
Mm.
And as an incentive, they said, we'll give you $2 back on every person you bring. So I was like 19 at the time, hadn't been drinking yet or whatever. So I was like, you know what? I can get 10 people, get $20.
Yeah.
Get back on the train, get something to eat, go to Brooklyn. So many people from my job and my family thought I was funny. To this day, the record still stands, like 90-something people showed up.
Wow.
So I made $180 my first night. And, you know, constantly after that, the word got around the office. 20 people each week would come, and I just kept doing it. I met some comics, put me on other shows, and I never stopped doing it. 20 years later, I'm still doing it.
So, okay, but now let me ask you this, because essentially that was a bringer show.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, bringer shows, especially in L.A., it's like there's a real bad stigma with with bringer shows. And a lot of new comics, you know, like you got to go through this whole process of bringing people, this and that. And the show structure is like it's a long show and there's a lot of, I'm just going to say it, shitty comedians.
Oh, yeah. Terrible.
Right?
I didn't know we can curse.
Yeah. Well, this is,
no.
This is internet.
I'm not going to. I may if it comes out, but at least I know I have the freedom to. No, but no, really. Yeah, it's a bad show. And let me tell you, the funniest thing happened during my show. So I'm headlining first night because I've got all these people in the show.
Yeah, so you're the last.
So so you know they're smart. They're like, listen, we're not gonna put this kid on to the end.
Yeah,
you know, and it's an amateur show. So like you said, everybody's either terrible.
Yeah.
Or just okay. Yeah. So my confidence is building after every comic. So this comic comes out of nowhere. This guy like looks like a bum off the street. He's like, hey, man, what's going on tonight? It's Monday. Why is the club so busy? I didn't know he was a regular at the club.
Mm.
And he was like, oh, Billy, man, this kid brought all these people in here. He was like, I got to get on. And he's like, you got to ask the kid. So he comes to me.
Mm.
I'm watching Def Jam. I'm watching Comedy Central, whatever's out at the time. I've never seen him before. He looks like the rest of these bums, right? Yeah. I was like, well, go ahead, get some. You know, go ahead, get some before I get on. This dude turned the club upside down. My mother's in the front, pulling her glasses off, laughing, crying tears. I'm like, what the hell's, who is this guy? It's like, it's Billy. He does the Friday night shows. I was like, are you serious? So when I got on stage, this is lesson number one. Any comic who's listening right now, the truth is the best medicine in comedy.
Yeah.
First thing I said, and I don't even remember the rest of my jokes. I said, this is my first time on stage. And y'all put me on after that motherfucker, the room exploded. And that was the beginning of my career ever since.
Wow.
And so it was a great night. I took the $180, took the younger people who came, my cousins and the younger people from work. We went to Pizzeria Uno and I picked up the tab.
There you go.
And that was it. And every week from there, I started doing it and bringing different people from the job and everything. And then I got some people from BET looked at me. Then I went to Apollo Comedy Hour. Then I started working for Steve Harvey as his warm-up guy. So it was just, you know, a progression, you know, meeting other comics and doing my thing.
Wow. That's like a story like that is what you want to hear.
Yeah.
But we know everyone's story is not like that.
No. Right? There's some comics who I'm very good friends with right now who are doing pretty good, who I've seen go through the bottom. My story's been pretty decent. Like, you know, I got booed at some hood shows where they were waiting for Naughty by Nature to come on after. You know what I mean? They were there for that.
Yeah.
We ain't for no damn comedy.
Yeah.
I've gotten booed in that situation, but I've seen people with a nice crowd get booed by the nicest people and go through this progression. But now they're doing well.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've come through the bottom, but they really earned their stripes.
Yeah.
You know, I was really lucky.
Now, well, what was one of your bad shows?
Was there
a bomb? You know, because every comic bombs. So what was one of your...
So there's this place in New Jersey called the Peppermint Lounge. And as I'm saying it, there's a bunch of comedians from the Def Jam era whose hair is standing up on the back of their neck. That's where you had to go to perform, you know. So now, mind you, I'm at the New York Comedy Club.
Mm.
It's pretty, you know, be honest with you, it's like mostly white, you know what I'm saying? So I'm killing them crowds, you know? Then they take me there. Queen Latifah's in the back. Naughty by Nature's on this side. And this is when they're in their heyday. Like, you know, Queen Latifah wasn't on no talk show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. She wasn't doing L'Oreal and CoverGirl and all this other stuff. So it was in Newark, New Jersey, or Orange, New Jersey. Just really rough crowd, over 500 people. Bill Bellamy was the host, and he wasn't there this time. So Flex Alexander was the host. No disrespect, but total drop off from Bill Bellamy. Sorry,
Bill Bellamy light.
Yeah,
but Flex is a great guy.
Yeah,
I didn't know he even did stand up.
That's my dude because he can hoop. You know what I'm saying? So we play basketball together. But as far as stand up, yeah, exactly. I didn't know he did stand up either. So that night, this is how I got. My mother went to some function. Some dude was like, yo, I'm going to take your son to the Peppermint if he's really good, blah, blah, blah. So this guy picks me up in New York. We drive out in his car to New Jersey. And let me tell you something. Them dudes let me have it. They booed me, right?
Yeah.
And then I felt like I was on a bad date because the dude, like, I slept on his couch the next day. I was like, can you take me to the train station? He's like, man, just walk up the block. Three days. I was like, are you serious? Never again. So,
you had a walk of shame too.
Walk of shame, man. Like I had on heels and stuff. I'm walking through the street. They like, ew, you got the same thing you had on last night. That dude would not take me back across the bridge.
Oh, man.
And that was like the worst comedy night of my life. But luckily I had it early. Had it early on and, you know, better things happen, you know, days and months later.
Yeah. Wow. That is a story.
Yeah, buddy.
So how do you recover from that? You know, cause I know like there's, you know, some comedians, you know, say that like they'll have one bad show, but then the next show is like their redemption show, you know, so they go out there and really kill. So
you know
how do you
what? I actually had a lot of older comics like me. So that's how I made it quickly, so fast, because they would take me on the road or do something. So I would have shows that weren't bad, but they weren't up to my standard. Like, I'm not a perfectionist, but, you know, you already know how you want the crowd to react to your jokes.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of comics tell me, one in particular, this guy, Drew Frazier, say, hey, man, you know, because I just went back to my hotel room or something like after one performance. He was like, nah, man, you know what? You stay here. You hang out and you act like you killed it. You know what I mean? They don't know no better.
Yeah.
You know, and even Steve Harvey said it before. He was like, yo, I know half these jokes I say ain't funny, but I believe they funny, so they believe they funny. Yeah. You know, and it's funny because when you see him tell jokes, if you notice, Steve says this a lot. Y'all ain't got the laugh. It's funny to me.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And people start laughing after that. And so, you know, with that attitude, it's not a cockiness, but it is a confidence that you have to have being a comedian.
Yeah.
You know? So that's pretty much what I took taken from those older comics.
So now, well, let's talk about how did you link up with Steve Harvey? You said you started opening for him.
Yeah. You know what happened was I was doing a lot of shows around town, and the production crew from the Apollo, they would always have the young up and coming or just new comics in New York go and do warm ups for Steve. And they would switch us out. You know, they would have like one guy do Friday, one guy do Saturday, one guy do Sunday. And there was a time where they wanted me to do it, and I was the youngest. So they were like, well, you come and watch the guys Friday and Saturday, and then we'll give you Sunday. You know, you'll learn how to do the warm-ups.
Yeah.
And the two guys couldn't make it on Friday or Saturday. So the first day I got, they was like, we got to put you on Friday. Just go out there. And then Steve told me, don't make fun of the crowd. Don't make fun of my crowd. That's it was his crowd. Don't make fun of my crowd. So when I get out there, I ain't got to work and blah, blah, blah. And I did everything to a T, worked with the band, you know, got everybody. And it was like a great response from the crowd. He came out. It was a standing ovation for him. They were just ready to go. And from that, they were like, you know what? They fired the other guys. And for the next 3 years, I not only became the only warm-up, but I also went on tour and did the McDonald's tour with McDonald's and American Airlines to find the kids for the show. So it was just a great culmination. And once Steve stepped away, I got an opportunity to be the host, which I did become for the next 3 years before Monique came on. So it was just awesome. Yeah. Like I said, man, I mean, just people say, oh, I'm so blessed. But if you want to say that, I was really in a good place at a good time all the time. And just to be from Harlem, to be able to be the host of the Apollo.
Yeah.
And I think to this day, I'm the youngest to ever host it.
Wow.
Tony Rock thinks he's the best to ever host it, which I must say, I'm at least the cutest to ever host.
Well, I mean, he is currently hosting it right now.
Yeah, he is. So, That's my dude, too. That's my dude.
You know, and here's the thing, because I believe that it's the activity, too.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of people, like, they, you know, want to sit at home and, like, wish for whatever to come, but you got to be out there.
No,
and,
you have to.
You know, and so, like, because you were out there, you're doing the activity. So how often, you know, especially in the early stages, would you get up on stage? Would you do open mic? Like, how often would you do it?
On everything, every single night. Every single night we was in Brooklyn, you know, in New York, and it was a great place not only to be from, but I tell comics this too. If you're gonna be a stand up, it's cool to be a stand up in your city, but no city has a culture like Chicago, New York, LA, even Atlanta. They have little rooms where people just like move over a pool table and you're telling jokes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And New York is the epicenter. It's like every place is a room. There's 50 million clubs and places to get on. So that's what I did. Every night, me and a buddy of mine, Richard Pierre Louis, who's an actor now out here in L.A., we teamed up and we went everywhere together. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Sunday was like college for us, because there was this place called the Boston Comedy Club where we would get on Sundays, and it was the best. Dave Chappelle would come through, Chris Rock, and they would just throw us on the stage with those guys. So it was almost like you put it on your resume. Yeah. I opened up with Dave Chappelle. You know what I mean?
We was in the same room together.
Yeah, exactly. Know. And so with that, you know, I tell these young comics, man, every time you get a chance, go on stage and try something new.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now, and because I forget who I was talking to. I want to say it was when David was in. But we're talking about crowd work. And so, you know, because there's sometimes, that's the beautiful thing about being a comic, is that, you know, you have your set, you have your hot 15 or your 25 or whatever it is, but have you ever gone on stage and just said, you know what, forget material, I'm just going to go and see what happens?
Oh, yeah. You have to do that. You know what I mean? Because, you know, a lot of the time, I tell you one time it happened, I was actually working with Dave Chappelle on his show. And this is how I got actually written into some of the sketches, because, you know, he and I built a relationship, because he just called out of the blue. It was just getting off the ground. And he was like, yo, we need high energy with this crowd when we do these wraparounds. So I came in, and one day he either got sick or something happened. They tried to say he had diarrhea or whatever. I don't know. I think he was back there smoking, right? And he just took 45 minutes. And for that 45 minutes, it was just me and the DJ. Mm. So I would just like, you know, like talk to the crowd, get the DJ involved and all this other stuff. And it all came off the top of my head. And we even have it recorded. They said, we recorded the whole thing. And it was just off the top of my head. So you have to be able, 45 minutes. With Dave Chappelle's audience, you could take that C off the thing and put an R on there. It was my show, so it was just great, you know. And I do that a lot because I host a lot of shows too. Yeah. So you have to be able to kind of just be able to be flexible, and being having a radio background now too, that allowed me to just be witty and just say things off the top of my head. So it's all good.
Okay,
but you got to have that gift because something can happen. You know, first joke don't work, or those, you know, you got to recalibrate and just get the audience back to where you need them to be.
Yeah.
You got to have some wittiness about you.
Who do you look up to comedy wise?
Man.
Because you've been around a lot of big name, big players. So who do you really look up to?
I don't know why. It's not that I don't know why. I love Martin Lawrence. It's something about him. Like maybe when I was a kid, like I was, you know, 14, 15, 13 when he was coming into it. And I was just like loving his progression and how he did the House Party movie.
Yeah.
Then to see him do an HBO special, then his show, then Def Jam. It was just like crazy. So I like Martin, but actually, Seinfeld I like. I like George Carlin. Mm. Who else? Man, there's so many comics. I love John Witherspoon.
Yeah.
And people don't understand how funny he is.
Yeah.
Like they see him on these little shows and whatever. And
Friday,
something
like that. Yeah.
And he's been working for years.
Yeah.
Trying to make it. You know what I mean? He was on What's Happening. He was like the DJ. All right, y'all, we got Rerun over here. I was like, that was John Witherspoon. You know, he just shows you that, you know, you have to have, you know, some staying power. You have to be, you know, believe in yourself.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not going to be big your whole career. You might get overnight success, but then you might have to work it. Look at him. He's the biggest thing right now. He can go wherever he wants, write his own ticket. Mm-hmm. He's good. Mm-hmm. You know?
So when you're constructing a joke, right, you know, because a lot of comedians, especially starting out, they'll like just write the joke longhand and this and that.
Totally.
How do you do it now? Or how did you do it when you first started? And then how do you do it now?
I used to do the longhand. Mm. And then she said, man, that ain't no good. I used to do it like that. Then it went to a point where I would just like, you know, like you said, I would just go off the top of my head and just, not really off the top of my head, but I would have a topic that I would want to talk about. Now, I kind of write the joke in my head and I write the topic down. Mm. So, like, I have this new joke that I wrote about, like, you know, I'm over 40 now. Now I got to start thinking about this prostate thing.
Mm.
You know, and my whole thing is, like, you got to turn around at least 6 times before you let them do it. Like, let me, one more question. before you do this. You know what I mean? So, and it's how you act it out on stage and the crowd gets into it and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm more of a person. I write down the topic and I'm more of a storyteller, so I can tell a story around that topic, which makes it fresh and new almost every time. I never tell it the same.
Yeah.
You know? So that makes it, if you write it longhand, like you said, now you're committed to just saying it the way it's written. You know? And that's, you know, for some people it works. For me, it doesn't.
And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, especially about, you know, writing jokes and, you know, developing your own material. There's been a lot of talks, you know, with the Carlos Mencias, and, you know, there's the new guy on the internet. I forget his name, but, you know, they say he stole some of, you know, Patrice O'Neill's material. So, one, because, you know, from one comedy to another, right? You may have a fart joke, I may have a fart joke, and it's like, boom, 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 fart joke, and it's not the same, but it's the same type of joke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, so let me tell you this. And I don't know Carlos that well. We know of each other when we see each other. Oh, man, what's up? Mm. I felt bad for him one night because I was performing at the Improv on a Monday night or something like that. And
Mo Better Monday.
My man D-Ray was hosting. And I felt bad because I felt uncomfortable when I saw Carlos walk in. He's got such a reputation. Yeah. I was like, oh, I don't want to do my jokes. I might go do something from 1992 on him, you know,
and I
started in 93. You know, so when you get a reputation like that, it's pretty bad. But, you know, sometimes you got to be able to step back and realize when two, you know, comedic minds can think alike.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a Rihanna joke and you say something like, oh, Rihanna, blah, blah, everybody's thinking that, dude.
Yeah.
Like, even regular folks is thinking that. Now, if you're talking about how you had a bar mitzvah and your mom's and your pop's girlfriend got into it, now, that's my joke.
Yeah.
That's my life. You know what I mean? Things like that. You know, and you can tell who steals and who doesn't. But sometimes some comics who are not very talented, they go around talking about everybody that stole a joke, and your jokes are very general. There's some general jokes that the average, like, okay, like Kevin Hart can do a joke about him getting beat up in front of his girlfriend. Guess what? I did the same thing. Mm. But guess what? Somebody probably did it before me. Like, those jokes are so general. You being the guy getting beat up and your girlfriend getting beat up, you know, those things are not stealing. It's just general jokes that come from a bucket of generalization.
Yeah.
You know, but when Kevin talks about his kids, I better not talk about my daughter the same way he's talking about his daughter, because it's a different story.
Yeah.
You know, so that's when people get like, they cross the line. And Patrice O'Neal, everybody's picking up off his car. I mean, like, my gosh, man.
Yeah.
Leave that dude alone, man.
Yeah.
He's a big dude. They still getting some of that carcass. Goodness.
No, and because, you know, I know Michael Collier has like a famous line that he says. It says, you know, like, once the comedian who used to say the joke is dead, that doesn't mean that the joke should die with the comedian.
Yeah.
You know, but and so like, the reason why I respect the way he does it is because he still gives credit.
He still gives credit to, while he's doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't just say like, this is my new job.
No,
like,
but these dudes step into the body, they morph into the guy, you know what I mean? Yeah. But at the end of the day, you know, that's only going to last for so long, because, you know, Patrice is just so original. He was just so good. It was more of his delivery than it was even the joke sometime, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so he was actually a great friend of mine's, and it was just like, man, that dude was great.
Yeah.
You know, he was much more talented than people gave him credit for.
Dude.
You know?
Talk about like underrated. Cause like you can go back and watch his specials and then you can listen to this, you know, some of the Obi and Anthony stuff that he did. And you're like, dude, this was like it was like genius.
Yes.
You know? And you're like, why wasn't this guy bigger than he was?
Yo, you would think, you would hear his joke and then you would like go out and think about something he said. Like, he had this one joke. He said, man, I was sitting next to this guy on the train and his face was not ready for a punch. And you look at PB like, yo, if I hit this dude right now, he is so not ready. You know? And Patrice would say stuff like that and it would be so true, and you just never thought about things like that.
Yeah.
And so he's going to be definitely missed. That's my dude, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. I like writing new stuff, right? And, you know, we talked about this earlier about, you know, you have these comics who develop their set and they just use their set all over town. They go on tour with it. You know, like you said, it's their bread and butter.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone like Louis C.K., you know, he'll do like an hour special like once a year, once every other year. But once he's done that hour special, he'll throw that hour away and come up with some new stuff.
Yeah.
So how important do you think it is as a comedian, as a working comedian, to always have something fresh?
It's always good to have something fresh, especially if you're a comic who goes on tour, like each and every year, you're doing a club once a year.
Mm.
You know, and most comics, if you're a really good comic and you're working, you're doing a certain improv once a year, sometimes twice.
Yeah.
I think you should switch your act up every year. You know, or every time you do a special, you should throw it away. Mm. Now, as far as Louis C.K. is concerned, I like that dude. He is extremely talented, but it's like a house, man. You build up equity. You could take the freedom to do certain things. So people already assume that he's funny.
Mm.
So he could take that and do a lot of new stuff. You know what I mean? Because if you look at a Louis C.K. set, it's actually great. It's funny, but you're laughing more because it's Louis C.K. And you know that, you know, at some point it's some genius in there, but it's not high intensity, or it's not as great as the last one. Or that you could take some jokes from this one and that one. If you took your favorite and you could come up with a mega set.
Yeah.
You know, not anybody, but like Dave Chappelle could do 3 hours.
Yeah.
Now, in that 3 hours, was it all high intensity? Hell no.
No.
If it was, there wouldn't be 10 people inside the Laugh Factory instead of 300 that was in there when he started.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not to say that these guys are not good or whatever. They're fantastic. They're geniuses, you know?
Mm.
But at the same time, like, Louis C.K. built that equity. He's like, yo, he's funny. When he comes on stage, I'm laughing at everything he says, his facial expressions and everything, because he's Louis C.K.
Yeah.
You know? So, you could. I hope to get to that point where I could say, hey, I'm doing everything new, too. Biggity-biggity-boo. Yeah. You know, they'd be like, oh my God, that's new. So, yeah.
And, you know, like, one thing that I really believe, too, is that comedy is probably one of, like, the last forms of really free speech that you have.
Yeah.
You know, because you can literally get on stage and say anything.
Yeah.
You know, but then, you know, you hear about the Daniel Tosh and the Kramer and the, what's his name? I forget. He was on 30 Rock.
Tracy Morgan.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they're having to apologize after saying a joke.
Yeah.
You know, because I really believe that you shouldn't have to apologize after you say a joke.
I don't think so either. And it's just weird because, you know, if you think about it, about how offensive language can be, especially if you go to a comedy show, I could talk about a joke about my father not being there, and somebody can be like, my father just died. How dare you do a joke about fathers? You know what I mean? It's like, you can't help but to offend people. You know, comedy was meant to some degree to offend you to the point where you don't have to take whatever you're going through so seriously.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And so for Tracy to have to go through it, and also I think that whole situation with Michael Richardson, that was just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even want to discuss that. That was just like, I was like, dude, he just wigged out.
Yeah, he really just had a breakdown because he was having a bad set, and then he just kind of had a breakdown. So it was like, you know, you have to, like, there's some point where, like, okay, this isn't working.
Like, Riley Cooper from the Eagles was like, damn, I said it, but I ain't say it like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's some that need apology. There's others that, you know, I would think, like, you know, like Daniel Tosh, he just goes there.
Mm.
But, you know, Comedy Central gave him the liberty to do that. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, and that's why he's so funny.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't think he means anything about it. You don't even know what his sexuality is half the time. You know, you'd be like, why is this dude naked in front of, laying on a guy? But then he's so crazy. He'd be like, he may just not be into guys. He might like girls. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's funny to me.
He is.
He's hilarious. And Tracy Morgan is just, he'll say anything. Your girlfriend, you ever lick up brown eye? Like, what? What? Tracy, I took him out. We went to the stand, me, him, and my girlfriend at the time. The dude just takes off his shirt. He was like, yo, you ever lick your girl in the brown eye? I'm like, brown eye? Okay. Thanks, Trace. Thanks, Trey. So, yeah.
He was so unpredictable.
He's very unpredictable.
So let's talk about a couple of things that you've done. You've done Def Comedy Jam. You know, we talked about you were the host of the Showtime at the Apollo. You're your announcer on the Chappelle Show. You know, you said you hopped into some skits too. And then, so how did you link up with Dave Chappelle?
Yo, it was so funny. You know, like I said, I just gotten the job hosting the Apollo. And, you know, some of the producers from that show was also working with Dave. So they told Dave, and Dave knew, you know, we knew each other. So he called me personally. He was like, yo, Rue, you know, what you doing? Come down, blah, blah, blah. And you know, a lot of comics, you know, some comics can be haters. They were like, yo, man, you got your own show. You don't need to be doing no warm up for his show. I was like, nah, it'd be a good situation for him. It'll help him.
Mm.
And then maybe some way down the line, it'll come around and help me out. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I actually got written into some of the sketches. And there was one night I was reading the teleprompter on the Apollo, and I was like, this is not matching up. There was like Dave from DC, right? He came out from the back. The crowd went crazy. Wow. So he came and showed some love, and everybody in the audience was like, you know, that shined on me. They were like, yo, say Dave Chappelle came to say what's up to Rudy Rush. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just, you know, friends helping friends out. Like, I would do anything if I could, if I had the time to do it for a friend. You know what I mean? Because comedy's fun. I love getting on stage. Are you kidding me? So, and they were paying pretty well.
That was
another check.
There you go. Yeah. Right.
I had to take all my little Steve Harvey suits and get some ties on. I'm like, yeah.
But, okay, now, you know, I just want to touch on this really, really quickly. You know, like with the whole, you know, the Dave Chappelle situation and, you know, the Cat Williams. You know, and you see these guys, you know, and Dave Chappelle talked about it on Hollywood, you know, it puts you in such a awkward position, you know, that you have to kind of maneuver in such a way because you can get lost or you can really get caught up in this whole Hollywood thing, you know. And, you know, one thing I really do admire about Dave Chappelle is, you know, where he says that you're never going to see him play a gay man, or you won't see him in a dress, you know, and he's held that. You know, because you've had a lot of black comedians.
Oh yeah,
you know, and they've gone down that road.
Yo, every time on his show too, when there was like a little bit of a weird character or something like that he would normally do, they'd call me. I'm like, how much you paying me?
Say, Rudy, come on through.
They're gonna give me scale times too if I'm gonna get in there, and there's gonna be somebody else in the bed now. Come on,
No,
I totally agree, but In Cat Williams' situation and in Dave's situation, I can speak more to Dave because I know him personally.
Yeah.
People don't understand. It's like people thought about that $50 million that Dave got.
Yeah.
That was more, you know, Dave Chappelle's CD when it first came out was the highest selling DVD in the history, I think it's still breaking records now. And this is why you get CSI on DVD. Every show you ever had, you can get it on DVD now because of what Dave Chappelle's show
did.
And so that was Comedy Central giving Dave some get back because he didn't get anything on that. He got hosed on the first deal. Who thinks about DVDs? I got a show. Like, just give me that money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the show did so well. So the $50 million was partially them, like, saying, hey, we're sorry. We didn't know.
we didn't know either. Yeah.
But then the people around you, that's what happens. You know, like, even, and I'm not going to put names out there or something, but I know people around, they was thinking out of that $50 million, oh, I'm going to at least get a million of that. Are you kidding me? You might get a little more than scale.
Yeah.
But who's it? Why do you think you deserve $1 million of his 50?
Yeah.
And that was the vibe that was going around. And this is just from what I understand and can see just from my eyes view. Can you imagine with managers and all these other people trying to get your money? That's why he ain't go crazy. He just was like, let me just back up off this. Yeah. I got money. I don't need the headache.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with Dave. People can say what they want.
Yeah.
But that's what really happened.
Yeah.
In my opinion, and I know I'm telling the truth.
Well, no, and because like that's what you see, because like, you know, he didn't go crazy.
No.
People, you're like, and because I hate that they try and paint this.
He went to South Africa and he's sucking on chicken bones and he stabbed the shark in the eye and I was like, what?
Like, you know, because it was one, you know, like, if someone walks away from something because their heart isn't in it anymore, or because it's not giving them what they originally got into it for, then they should be allowed to walk away from it, regardless of what the situation is, you know?
Yes.
And then if he wants to go take a vacation, let the man take a vacation.
Yeah. And that's what happened. I think there were so many lives that were affected, you know, by him stepping back, because there were careers that were like, you know, there's so many careers that was built off of that show.
Yeah.
I mean, you had Charlie Murphy, Bill Burr, Donnell Rollins. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of comedians who came through there and benefited, and they're still benefiting now.
Yeah.
So the upcoming season was so anticipated. Even Comedy Central, they have yet to find a show. Even though Tosh.0 is funny, it still hasn't resonated as much as Dave Chappelle's show. You could still run Dave Chappelle's show on there, and people will still watch it.
Yeah.
So they haven't reached that yet, and so you could see.
Key and Peele's kind of close.
I like them though.
It's kind of close, but it's not, and because you see the way that they have it structured, it's structured like the Chappelle show.
Yeah, I like Key and Peele, but you know, I don't want to. I think you don't say anything.
No,
I think they go too. It's not about the black humor. They just do a lot of it, you know. And and from people from the hood, like, I could see the artistic in it because I'm a comic. I can see the comedy in it. But people from the hood be like, yo, they be playing black too much.
Yeah,
and they too light skinned to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, real talk.
Yeah.
You feel me? Like, they'd rather see Dave Chappelle say nigga all day and do all this goofy shit, and then to see those dudes. Oh, every time and blah, blah, blah. I think it's funny, but like, I'm just talking about like, yo, you know, Key and Peele, dudes in the street be like, nah, I don't mess with that money. Mm. They stay at home and watch Dave Chappelle though.
Yeah.
They smoke their weed, be like, yo, Dave, you know, so I like Key and Peele, but at the same time, the streets, they got to get some acceptance in the street.
Okay.
I said it. It's out there.
It's, I mean, but you know, like on online, they're doing great.
No, they are doing.
And white folk love them.
It's the funniest joint. Yeah, it's the funniest joint. I laugh. I love the one when the dude, it's so many skits that they have. You know what I'm saying? But like I said, Chappelle was liked by everybody. It's like Kevin Hart. Yeah. Everybody likes Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody think Kevin Hart's famous because black people like him. White people love Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Because like, once you get that commercial acceptance,
boom,
then you know that's why you have 5 movies coming out in the next 8-9 months.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So, and a lot of them are white movies.
Yeah. I just don't think that you're going to see the Key and Peele special at the Apollo. I don't know if you're going to sell that out. I don't know if you're going to sell tickets on that one.
Yeah, they're not doing the Chitlin' Circuit anytime
soon.
Exactly.
They're not doing the Uptown in Atlanta.
But I say, you had a Comedy Central special.
Comedy Central special, half-hour special. Just did an hour special called Harlem to Hollywood that aired on Showtime last year, one of the higher-rated ones. Mm-hmm. It's on Amazon right now. It's at Walmart. So, yeah, I'm doing my thing.
So, okay, but now, what is that like? Like, we walk into Walmart and then see your DVD on the shelf.
Yes, next to all the black movies that you'd be like, they made this win. You ever see those movies? You'd be like, what?
All that straight to Netflix stuff. And
that's
then you're like,
TC for Magnum P.I. in this. He played the dad. He got Gabriel Union and Miguel Nunez. He's in every black movie that you didn't know was made.
Is that Wesley Jonathan right there? Is that
He's second. Right.
Oh God, he's terrible.
This is the going there show.
Shout out. I can't even do it. I can't even do it anymore. But yeah, so what is that like walking into Walmart and then seeing your DVD? And then, like, do you get you mad if you see someone walking in the aisle and pass over your DVD?
Oh, man. it was when I first got there, it was packed too. It was like full. Like all the other ones, like 2 and 3, yeah. Kevin Hart, Seriously Funny, Rudy Rush. It was like 10. It was packed. The guy was like, there's more in the back. You want a box?
I was like, damn.
But it was just healthy to see it there. It was actually fun to see because I've never seen that. You know, I've seen my name. You know, you always take a picture of your name on the marquee and everything like that. But to see your stuff in the store, that was kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, but how did you land some of these coveted TV spots? You know, because you're on The Funny Spot, you're on First Amendment, you're Laugh Mob, you're on Comic View. So how does, especially for, you know, like the young working comedians who've been in it, who are frustrated and like, this dude got on TV, how come I'm not getting on TV? So.
Okay, so this is if Louis C.K. listens to this and I think I gave him enough praise.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, comics, sometimes you misinterpret what people say. That dude is great, man.
Yeah.
And one thing I did learn from him is like, you do have to change. You know what I'm saying? Now to be able to pull off something makes him genius. For me to have the sense to be like, okay, I did this, I throw it in the trash. Not in the trash, but I gotta do a new set to be on TV. And every time I've done something on TV, it's been a new set. You know what I mean? And it doesn't say I can go and do a new hour every, you know, put a new hour special out. But like Louis C.K., you gotta change up, you know? And that's what allowed me to do all of those shows because every producer was like, yo, this is hot, new material. It's funny than everything else is out there. We want him on our program. And actually, like right now, I'm taping Centric Comedy All-Stars in Vegas on November 7th. So, you know, that's another thing. And then I just did BET's Comic View with some more, and I ripped that up. So it's like
That's coming back.
It's coming back in March. So, you know, like that's how I stay relevant. That's how I stay in the mix, you know?
So now what do you say? And, you know, because I know like comedy out here in L.A. is different than comedy in New York.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah.
So what would you say is probably the biggest difference between L.A. comedy clubs and New York comedy clubs besides the amount of comedy clubs?
I tell the comics this. L.A., you know, if you're going to do comedy, go to New York. If you're going to just up and leave, say you're from Indiana somewhere, just go to New York. In New York, you can make a living. New York, you can pay your rent.
Yeah.
You get $75, $50, $100. You can work all week and muster. You know what I'm saying? If you work hard, you can make the rent or make some bills at the end of the month. Here in L.A., I got two $35 checks waiting for me at the Laugh Factory. They just sitting there because I don't really need them right now unless I can go to get something to eat.
Yeah.
But no, here they don't pay you because you get paid because people see you. Mm-hmm. You know, L.A. is different. It's very hard to get a spot here. Mm-hmm. So unless you're ready to be a regular person and get a job, and I tell young comics this too, even comics who are established, if you're not ready to come here and work at another job or have road work already set up, you're not going to make it here. Yeah. You know, and it's actually, it was expensive in New York and LA, but here it's just no money.
Yeah.
You know, it's all opportunity. You got to grind here.
Yeah.
Which I don't have a problem with. I like that. But at the same time, that's the difference.
Okay.
You know, it's the difference though. You know, you go to New York, you don't know who you may see, it's whatever. But here, you be like, yo, Eddie Murphy came in the club tonight.
Yeah.
Chris Rock came in. He wants me to work on his project. That's the benefit of being on stage in LA.
Yeah, because you really never know who may just pop in and just sit in the audience.
Dude, I met Nick Pardue.
Yeah.
At the comedy club. And now I'm sitting right here with him.
See?
No, for real though. But one day, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you never know. Like, we just chance meeting, and now you don't even know what this does because I ruffle some feathers maybe.
if we're not back next week in the next 2 weeks, then you'll know what happened. You know?
I think I was pretty fair, man.
But that's the thing too, because you know, I mean, comics, we know how to take a joke. We can dish it, you know, but you gotta know how to handle it too.
Yeah.
You know, and speaking of what, so hecklers. Right, because you know it's a part of the job.
Oh yeah.
So how do you combat these hecklers?
Now I'm really good with hecklers because I came up in that New York, New Jersey system where like people was just throwing stuff, just yelling stuff out. And what I try to do, some comics get offended, and they, you know, because you throw them off their base, and they want you to get kicked out. They want to have a real, you know, they want to just tear you down to your core. Mm. Me, I try to make fun of the person and involve them in the show as much as I can and just try to diffuse it. Okay, now we you got your stuff out. Mm. Can we move on? And everybody claps. Give them a round of applause for being, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I keep it moving. If it, you know, continues, then I'm like, all right, security, I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
But as far as hecklers go, I'm great with handling them. I don't worry about hecklers at all, you know, so it's not an issue for me.
Yeah, especially if you have good wit and if you have good crowd work, yeah, then you can, you know, but if you, everything longhand and you word by word, yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And those are the people who get mad and be like, dude, I was just saying, yeah, everything. They'd be like, nope, sorry. I'm out here drunk, having a good time.
Yeah. What is probably one of the biggest nuggets or the best piece of advice that you either got from like a Steve Harvey or Martin Lawrence or Dave Chappelle or Kevin Hart or somebody?
Wow. Well, I think the best advice I got from Steve Harvey wanted me to get suits. He was like, man, you got to get some suits, player.
So yeah, but why? Like, why does he always wear? Because that's his thing.
That's his thing, and it's not my thing. I mean, I could wear a suit, but I went and got two suits. He told me to get a suit. I got two. I saved some money up, and I got two suits, a brown one and a black one. Mm. And let me tell you something. I didn't have enough shirts and ties to go. After a while, they started thinking I was security. I was like, yo, Steve, man, I can't afford it unless you're going to give me a budget or take some of them, take it back out out those big-ass suits you got. Give me one, you know? But he gave me, you know, the dress up and just that whole, you know, about telling jokes and stuff like that. Martin was more like, you know, it was just amazing that somebody who I looked up to so much called to meet me. His brother came down to the dressing room when I did Martin Lawrence First Amendment in DC.
Yeah.
They came down to my dressing room and was like, yo, he want to meet you. And he was like, yo, dude, he said, you know, I'm working on some stuff and I don't want, you know, I don't really like talking about stuff that ain't really done yet. But I was like, dude, just meeting you and you thinking I'm funny is dope.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was like the one moment. And Eddie Murphy, meeting him, I did something at the Laugh Factory, and this is like when he was still married. I was hosting for Chris Spencer in his place, and I did like this whole little, at the end of the show, I shouted him out and did this whole little Eddie Murphy, like boom, boom, boom. And everybody in the crowd was like, yo, that's how I feel about him too, blah, blah, blah. So afterwards, he was like, yo, you're the funniest. Hell, man, blah blah blah. I appreciate meeting you, blah blah blah. And I was like, whoop.
Yeah.
I was done.
Yeah,
you know. So that's some good stuff for me right there.
And you know what's crazy too about comedy is that like the guys that you look up to, like the guys that you know you watch on TV growing up or whatever, you can work with them.
Oh yeah,
like which is crazy.
That's crazy, man. You know? I met Bill Cosby. And it was the craziest thing because we were interviewing him and stuff like that. And he knew who I was.
Mm.
And he's seen some of my work and he knows I can work clean. He was like, Rudy, you know you work clean. So you blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, Bill, I do work clean sometimes. Yeah, how about that, dude? Bill, yellow booty butt.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, when your idols become your contemporaries or your peers, you're like, what?
Yeah.
Are you serious? Yeah. You see me in that light? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's amazing. So it's actually cool.
Now, just real quick on Bill Cosby, because, you know, he holds the record for most comedy Grammys, right? And I think that this is something that, like, people don't really think about, especially comedians.
No.
I don't think that we really think about putting out an album, because you could win a Grammy.
Dude.
If it's a good, because I think Louis C.K. won a couple, like, over the past couple years. So how important do you think it is to really have your material like that to where it can even be considered and in contention to now be a Grammy Award winning comedian?
I'm going to tell you like this. When you talk about Grammy Award winning or even
nominated
or even being considered to be looked at,
you're
going to take out 70% of all comics.
Yeah.
Because all of them are all visual. You know what I mean? You take certain, and I'm done. I think I've reached my quota with naming names. So you think about some of your favorite comics and think about their joke. It's all visual. There's, you know, the hand expressions and facial and man, she went like this.
Mm.
Or there's a joke where she was just like, and there's a facial expression that you won't come across on an album.
Mm.
You know, where Bill Cosby, he talked about his kids and Camille and then Ennis came down and he told me this. It's about those jokes, the stories.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's a lot of comedians who can't bring it for an hour just telling stories. Yeah, they got a story or two, but the rest of the, you're like, oh, I wonder what face he was making.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You know, you can't put that on an album. So you're going to eliminate a lot of people. And that's why a lot of comics don't think to go that route. Because they're not storytellers.
Yeah, and that ups your quota too. Like,
it really does.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
Nah.
You know. But you know, keep doing what you're doing. Leave more room for me. Yeah. Leave more room for me. Rudy.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
Last things, really kind of wrapping up, just, you know, current upcoming projects that you have going on. What do you got?
Oh, man. Let's see. Now, I do a podcast called Rush Unleashed. It's on SoundCloud. So we just, me and my dog from New York, we just do something. We play some music. We talk about topics. We just kick it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm just working on a bunch of projects, writing with Mike Epps on some stuff. You know, and just helped him out with his Arsenio Hall set. And then, okay. You know, I'm just getting on stage wherever I can. Like I said, I got a couple of comedy projects with the Centric thing coming up, the BET thing, and I'm just hitting the road.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then, you have a show tonight, too, right?
Yeah, tonight. Yo, each and every Friday that I'm in town, which I hope not to be in town, but on Friday nights at the Comedy Union, I'm hosting a big, big comedy show. And that can be anybody from Lavelle Crawford, Mike Epps, whoever's in town and wants to come and do the show. We have great, great comics and I'll be hosting it. So we're just trying to step up the level of, you know, things around town for everybody. So, you know, just come out. It's a 10 p.m. show and it's off the chain because I get it in.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. And so where can people find you online?
Oh, man, you can catch me at Rudy Rush on Twitter, at Rudy Rush on Instagram, which I have the best Instagram pictures probably of all comics. But you can catch me on that and Rudy Rush on Facebook.
Cool. There you go.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. Well, thank you, Rudy, for coming in. Great, great stuff. Hope you guys learned something.
You're doing a good job, by the way, too, sir.
I tried. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, man. Your parents should be proud.
Yes. 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 There you go. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. Again, you can find me all over the internet at The Nick Perdue. I'll see you guys next time.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Gabriel Christie, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network. If you have questions or comments, tweet us at BHL Online or email us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. For more exclusive content, visit blackhollywoodlive.com. This has been a presentation of the Black Hollywood Live Network.
Hollywood redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.